tonight.
All right!
We're gonna have a TV party, all right!
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Thursday, which means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Yesterday was Siblings Day, and we're going to talk about sibling rivalries in music and siblings on TV, siblings in music. And since I'm an only child, we are also going to talk about being an only child. So yesterday I was just like, what am I supposed to do? So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Every couple of weeks we talk to my next guest, Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk all things TV, and it's always a lot of fun when we get Dan on. Let's get Dan in here. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I'm okay. I texted my brother yesterday to acknowledge that it was National Sibling Day, and we agreed that we didn't really need to celebrate in any other way.
So you just have one brother?
I just have one younger brother who happens to live in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, we exchanged a text message to basically acknowledge that apparently it was National Sibling Day and that it's not a thing we apparently celebrate.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm an only child, so I don't celebrate it either. So
I don't think anyone does. And I feel like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, like one person said, oh, look, it's National Sibling Day. And then a couple of years ago, two people did. And then suddenly this year it felt like 5 or 10 people. And it concerns me.
Well, there was a lot of stuff on my social media news feeds with people posting pictures of their siblings and things like that. So I guess it was a thing on the old social media yesterday. That's for sure.
Once we start letting social media dictate what is or isn't the thing, well, I guess that's pretty much where we are right now, isn't it?
I think you're a little too late on that one, Dan.
Yeah, we're there. We went down that spiral a while ago, I'm afraid.
All right, well, let's get to the TV. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's start with Fosse Verdon. The first episode aired on Tuesday. I watched it when I got home from work yesterday morning. I loved it. Now, we talked about it a little bit. Now, have you seen more than the last time we talked?
No, I've still only seen the two because I figured once I wrote my review, I didn't want to watch any more because, at least not immediately before it premiered, because then I'd be like, my review was wrong, everything was off.
Right.
So I held off. Eventually, I no doubt will watch more ahead of time, but thus far, only the two this week and next week.
Okay. Well, I watched the premiere, and I really loved it. But you know, it's really funny that conversation that we had the last time you were on when you talked about it is the way I felt while I was watching it. It was like if I weren't such a big fan of both of these people, and if I wasn't familiar with their work, pretty. You know, intimately, would I like it as much as I liked it? You know what I mean? And that was your question was like, are people who aren't really like in the know about this or who, you know, because it's pretty inside the way it's set up.
Ooh, it's very inside.
Yeah, it really is. And as I was watching it, I was pleased. I mean, I thought it was great. But I just kept thinking back to what you said the last time you were on, Dan. It was like, how is somebody who's really not familiar just turning on the TV to watch, you know, an hour long drama? How are they going to feel about it?
And I think in a perfect world, anyone who enjoys it can then go and research.
Yeah.
You know, you can always go to YouTube and you can watch the various musical numbers from Sweet Charity and from Cabaret if you happen not to know them.
So by the way, Dan, we talked about it yesterday. The NewYorkTimes.com ran a thing that they called it's on our Facebook page. Loaded on our Facebook page. It's also with the New York Times website, where they called it go down the Fosse Verdon wormhole, and it was taking highlights of their career and embedding clips right in one place. So if you want, you could just go to the New York Times website, read about these great moments in their career, and then watch them.
Yeah, it's very easy to find those things. And it's very easy to go over the individual people at the party at Fosse's house and go, okay, well, I can figure out that's Patty Chayefsky.
Yeah.
I can figure out that's Neil Simon, et cetera, and sort of, should I care who Neil Simon's wife is? Well, I guess probably I should because it's Daya Cash from You're the Worst, so clearly I'm supposed to care about her, et cetera. And I think people can do that. I remain curious as to the differences in response between people who love the backdrop and the people and the stuff and the people who are just tuning into it because it looked good and because they're like, ooh, I like Michelle Williams, from Dawson's Creek. Probably people have moved on from just liking her from Dawson's Creek.
I hope so. I really hope so.
I wouldn't hope so. I think you can always hold a certain kernel of affection for Jen Lindley in your heart while also acknowledging that she's become a 4 or 5-time Oscar-nominated actress.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't dismissing Dawson's Creek, but I was just. I would hope people would acknowledge what an unbelievable actress that she has become over these years. Like just an astonishingly talented woman. So
I think people probably know, so I'm curious what the response is. The ratings were not huge, which kind of gives me the impression both that people were able to get the feeling of whether or not they wanted to watch this based on the trailers, which emphasized what it was, but also that it could be a self-selecting audience, and that if the audience was what the audience was, A, no one needs to worry about a second season, so that's moot to begin with.
Yeah.
And B, it could just mean that the people who are the right audience for it are going to watch it, and the people who aren't either will or won't, and that's okay, and that could just mean that the people who end up watching it end up really loving it, and any of my concerns about whether it plays to people who don't know it could just be meaningless.
Because they're not watching, exactly. How did Feud do? Because that was pretty niche, too. How did that do? Was it popular?
It did better. But the Ryan Murphy brand name really is a brand name, and I think that there probably were people out there looking at trailers for this going, they didn't mention Ryan Murphy's involvement.
Right.
It's not. Is this off brand? Is this generic? Is this whatever? And I don't know how huge his audience is. It's not like he's the biggest populist showrunner in the world, though you'd be surprised to know how many people watch 9-1-1 each week on Fox. It's a lot. But it did slightly better. And I think it did a better job of presenting a full sort of array of stars beyond its two leads, maybe, if that matters. And I think probably movie stars are always going to be a bigger deal than Broadway stars,
right?
Simply
right.
The nature of the art form. It was a slightly bigger audience, but not a huge audience. Definitely the two American Crime Story seasons both did bigger audiences, with OJ by far doing the larger of the audiences.
Yeah, of course. Well, but again, he's not involved at all. Ryan Murphy's not involved at all. Even though it's on FX and it feels like it's supposed to be a Ryan Murphy project, it's not at all. And I really think, obviously when you have Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams as your leads, you're going to have great acting. And that was absolutely the case of the pilot. I particularly, if Sam Rockwell is fantastic, but I really particularly loved what Michelle Williams did just in the pilot alone.
And you get to see her doing some more moves in next week's episode. So and if people need to brush up on things ahead of next week's episode, Damn Yankees is the thing you should brush up on.
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. Yeah, I really liked how they're playing with the timeline here, because they're jumping back and forth between the timelines and things. Because the first episode was essentially about the reaction to Sweet Charity. And then, like, him getting the job to direct Cabaret. And that was essentially what it was, and how he needed her to come in and help him with Cabaret. And that was essentially what it covered. And, of course, they started to cover his infidelity and all of that other stuff, which I know will get bigger as the show goes on. Do they continue in the same vein in episode two?
Yes, it splits between two time periods. One, as I mentioned, the Damn Yankees one, and then another one. I don't want to spoil everything in the structure, but
right.
Yes, I already teased that next week's People's Homework is Damn Yankees, so that's enough spoilers there.
Absolutely,
for that.
Absolutely. Well, I thought it was great, and again, you know, but this is coming from a guy who worships Bob Fosse and loves Gwen Verdon. I'm still very curious as to how they're going to handle all that jazz when we finally get to him making all that jazz. And we were talking about how deeply almost Inception like meta it's going to be the last time that you were on. So
I hope it works.
All right, I do too. Anyway, that's Fosse Verdon. I think it's great, and it's on FX on Tuesday nights, 9 o'clock Central. And I thought the first episode was really, really terrific. And you can read Dan's review over at the Hollywood Reporter, and you can always check it out at The Fine Print, FIEN, at both Twitter and Facebook. And we have a link on our Facebook page as well. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
All right, great. We got more TV to talk about, lots of other stuff to talk about TV related. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks, writes for the Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN, and we have a link on our Facebook page. So like us right now. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. More with Dan Feinberg right after this on WGN. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday will get underway in a little while here. Get your requests in now. That would be one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In honor of yesterday being Sibling Day, National Siblings Day, we are going to talk about sibling relationships and rivalry in music and in movies and in TV, and we also are going to talk about what it's like to things that only an only child would understand, of which I am one. So that's all coming up for Talk and Text. It's 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us. And right there on our Facebook page, you will see links to The Fine Print. And that's FIEN, and that is Dan Feinberg, who is TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joined us every 2 weeks to talk TV, and that's where we are right now, so let's get Dan back on. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right, Barry has premiered since the last time we spoke, and I am loving it, and but is it wrong, is it wrong that I'm still laughing? Because I still think it's funny. I mean, it's clearly darker, and it's going in a direction that's even darker than how the first season ended, but it still makes me laugh. I don't know what that says about me, Dan.
I don't want to say it's wrong. I just it's not so much the reaction that I had. I'm sure I laughed a couple times at each of the episodes that I saw. I just definitely felt like I was laughing markedly less. Mm-hmm. That would be the distinction I would make, is that I felt like the first season kind of evolved from comedy with seriously dramatic beats to kind of half and half to kind of surprisingly dark, but occasionally still very, very funny. And I felt as if the first three episodes back were dramatic with occasional wacky comedy.
Yeah.
Plus NoHo Hank, who is always just funny, but yeah, still sometimes gets a little pathos as well.
Right. Well, for people who might not know, this is season two of the show that was created by Bill Hader and Alec Berg, and Bill Hader plays a professional hitman who also wants to be an actor, and that's the sort of the combination of what's happening. And the cast is really strong, still really strong, and Henry Winkler, again, is doing fantastic work here, but you point out that he was more of a caricature in the first season, and now there's a real sense of, you want to talk about pathos, there's a real sense of sadness to his performance in the new season.
He just can't be a clown anymore, or he can't be purely a clown, because he's grieving, or thinks he's grieving, or isn't sure if he's grieving. He's for the first time actually living clearly for someone who isn't himself, and that has changed the dynamic of the character. I feel as if Sally, right? The girlfriend,
yeah.
I feel like she's gone much, much more dramatic. I feel like for the most part, across the board, with the exception of NoHo Hank, and even he is a little bit more serious this season, it's definitely felt as if the pain has risen to the surface more than laughter, which is totally what the show is going for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's great, and I think you know, I love that this is, you know, this is where Bill Hader is now, because he was always one of my favorite cast members on SNL, and I always thought he was just great and really funny and really talented. But I love that this is the direction that he's going in, and that he has so much creative control over this, and he's writing and he's directing, and he's given a really, really great performance. I'm just really happy for Bill Hader, being, you know, a super fan of his.
And it was renewed for a third season yesterday, so there will be more Barry still to come. And if it went from comedy to drama this season, I can't wait to see what it will become in season three. I have no answer for that.
Yeah. And this season of Veep is hilarious. And it's two. You understand? It's only like seven episodes or six episodes.
Yep, it is only seven episodes and out, so it's time to begin the process of getting emotional and saying goodbye.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such a great story on a personal level for Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, after the struggles that she went through, and that she's back, and I've no doubt in my mind she'll get an Emmy nomination for absolutely, you know, good reason. And the show is just, it's been consistently funny ever since it started.
It has been. I feel as if there have been some changes of tone, and I've heard from some people they felt like this season was a little bit meaner. I don't know that I necessarily disagree with that. I personally feel like one of the things that's happened in the past couple seasons, perhaps since Dave Mantel took over from Armando Iannucci, is that the show has kind of lost the idea of Serena is being occasionally capable. That they've lost kind of the idea that I felt like the first couple seasons had, which were that she was, I don't know, maybe not good at her job, but the point was that being a vice president, there was no way of knowing what being good at your job was, but that she still had these moments of inspiration where you kind of saw the brilliant politician or the actually compassionate leader. And I feel like to some degree she maybe has become kind of more empty and venal in the past couple of years, perhaps as a reflection of world events, perhaps because she's changed as a character. And it doesn't necessarily bother me. It just feels like a shift that the show is taking.
Yeah, yeah. I got you. That's legit. That's totally legit. Is it? Do some people complain that like all she does is rely on Tony Hale's character? Is that it?
I'm not sure I've heard that complaint. The complaint that I've heard from some people is that they feel like certain characters have become kind of unsustainably cartoonish, and I think that might be the case with Jonah. Bother me, but there's sort of it's one suspension of disbelief to believe that an aide could be this kind of horrible person and achieve a certain level of success, and then it's another to believe that he could get elected congressman in a very, very strange and quirky state, and then it's a kind of massive leap to where he currently is, and I don't think it's quote-unquote plausible. On the other hand, I'm still very much a fan of Tim Simons' performance and some of the wacky things that character does, but there's no question that character has become more cartoonish or maybe less sustainably cartoonish, whichever one you want to look at.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. But it's still though, very, very, are people watching it?
People are watching it to a reasonable degree. It's impossible to tell with first week numbers with HBO. People seem pleased, but HBO kind of likes to roll up all of its numbers into huge first month bundles and plus on demand bundles and whatever. So it's impossible to really get a feel for it right up until the minute that next weekend Game of Thrones premieres, and you can be sure that HBO is going to be blasting how many people watched it in the first night, because it's going to be some ungodly huge number.
Yeah. Yeah. It's everywhere. It is just so. Now did you see the premiere, Dan?
I did. I was in New York last week for the premiere and the premiere bash, which were held at Radio City Music Hall and at the Ziegfeld Theater, respectively. HBO likes to go all out. I realized as I was in the audience at the Radio City Music Hall that I'd never actually been inside the Radio City Music Hall for some reason.
It's a beautiful place, isn't it? Beautiful.
Oh, It's stunning.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, and a fantastic place to watch an episode of television blown up on the big screen.
That's pretty cool.
But yes, so I have seen the premiere. I can give very few spoilers, other than to say that I enjoyed it. I think some people hoping for an immediate rush into action from the new season are likely to be a little bit frustrated and disappointed, but that I enjoyed seeing these characters back on my TV and seeing them back together again and interacting again, and that at least for the first episode, which is under an hour, was all I needed, really.
Oh, it's under an hour. Well, yeah. Aren't they? They don't go over, do they? Just Game of Thrones is usually just a solid hour, right?
This season, the episodes are going to basically get much, much longer as they go along.
Oh,
the
first I see.
Two, I believe, are both under an hour, and then the last handful are all going to be comfortably over an hour 15 or so. There had been rumors initially that the season might be 6 90-minute episodes. That turns out not to have been the case, but yeah, the episodes are going to get a good deal meatier, and we'll see if that works. We'll see if that's the way the show is really designed. They've had a couple episodes that have gone long before, but it's not like, again, Ryan Murphy shows where sometimes they can go on forever, or like Sons of Anarchy in its last couple seasons where episodes went on basically endlessly from one week to the next. Basically, they didn't stop. So it's not going to be that quote-unquote bad. But yes, this episode is totally normal length and moves by very, very quickly. And yes, if your Twitter feed and Facebook feed and everything is anything like mine, it's one list of 15 best performances, 15 best episodes, 10 best action scenes, 15 people we think are going to end up on the Iron Throne at the end. It's a lot of content that people are churning on this show.
Yeah, they certainly are. They certainly are. And it's been popular from the get-go, but it has increased over the years to like a phenomenon.
It has increased wildly, and it has also consistently, during the entire run of the show, also been the most pirated show on television. So, which has always seemed like a strange thing for people to be announcing, and yet somehow it keeps getting announced every year.
Right.
But yes, it started off very popular and has become a phenomenon, and I am assuming probably by some measure this season is going to end up looking like the most watched show on television.
Yeah.
So whether it's going to be the most watched show on television in terms of live viewership, or you're going to have to go to the live plus 30 day and all that other stuff,
right?
I'm not sure, but it's going to be big.
It is, absolutely. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter. We talk TV every couple of weeks, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Lots more TV to talk about right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, which gets you requested now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Yeah, and we are talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we have a link on our Facebook page as well. And we every couple of weeks, Dan joins us to talk TV. There's always a lot to talk about. Let's get right back to it. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So NBC's got a new comedy, and it's called Abby's, and it's got some pretty talented people in the cast, including Chicagoan and good friend Neil Flynn. So tell us about Abby's.
Yes, the premise of Abby's is that, that's a very thin premise. It's basically that a woman, a former Marine, opens a unlicensed bar in the backyard of the house that she rents. And yeah, that's the plot of the show. It's not a particularly in-depth thing. So the bar has all of the alcohol and fun that you'd want to have at a bar. It also has an elaborate seating system where you have to sit on the outskirts of the bar for a certain period of time, and then you can get to sit at a table, and then when you're really, really special, you can get to sit actually at the bar, which is where we meet Chicago's own Neil Flynn, as people would know, janitor from Scrubs and the star of The Middle for a long time. The show's primary star is Natalie Morales, who people may know from the very, very short-lived ABC Family series Middleman, but also from lots and lots and lots of guest appearances from TV shows from Parks and Recreation to the current Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix, etc. The cast includes recognizable folks like Nelson Franklin, Jessica Chaffin, and the kind of core, quote-unquote, gimmick of the show is that it was shot outdoors in front of a live audience in bleachers. I don't know what purpose that gimmick served, but they keep saying it as if it's a thing, and every once in a while going in and out of commercials, they'll show the set with the bleachers so that you know it's a thing, but like I could not begin to tell you if the laughter sounds different, if the intimacy feels different. Basically, though, this is another one of those NBC comedies that starts off with a likable cast, a workable premise, and unfortunately very, very few laughs. And I like everyone involved with this. The show was created by Josh Malmuth, who works on Superstore and has worked on other good shows. I believe he worked on New Girl. It's executive produced by Mike Schur, who, of course, is Parks and Recreation and The Office and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so and The Good Place, of course.
Yeah.
So, fantastically talented people. I've seen four episodes now. They sent out three not-in-sequence episodes to critics, and then the episode that aired last week, which was the second one, they didn't send out. So now I've seen four episodes, and haven't laughed very much, but I'm going to keep watching because I like the people involved, and that's about what there is.
Yeah. I've got last week's episode on my DVR, and I've obviously set up for tonight's episode, too. And this is another, attempt for NBC to just, try and do the whole Thursday night comedy thing, that they did so well in the mid 2000s.
And it's a really good lineup. I mean, the lineup, still has Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is great and always great. It has Superstore, which I think is a wonderful little show. I continue not to think that AP Bio is very funny, but it has a lot of things in it that I also really like. Again, it has a phenomenal cast. It has a unique look and color palette that I really dig. It's got a great young cast, which I also think is impressive.
Yeah.
And again, I just wish I laughed more on a week-to-week basis, but I find it perfectly amiable and agreeable. So what you've got there is you got two great kind of cedar shows to feed into two shows that I'd like to believe could develop into something very promising. I think AP Bio is currently closer than Abby's is, but I don't know. I love Natalie Morales. I think she's great. I think Gail Flynn is always good.
Yeah.
So the pieces are there.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it just to see what the deal is. And again, I know Neil from back in the theater days here in Chicago. I know Neil when we used to drink at a 4 o'clock bar called Ties, and he would do theater in Chicago. But every single part that he ever had, either on television or in movies, he was always a cop. He was a uniformed cop in everything that he ever did in the early part of his career. If you go back and look at what Neil Flynn did, the first few things he did, he was a cop on Seinfeld. He was a cop. You know, he did nothing but cops. It's good.
Well, that was a joke on Scrubs, if memory serves.
Yes, exactly
that
right.
That they discovered that his cameo was it from The Fugitive, that they found?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
All right, so that's Abby's Thursday nights on NBC. You tweeted out that the TV Academy changed the rules on limited series. What's going on there?
They didn't exactly change the rules. They just made a specific ruling on three shows, and that's basically what they have to do at this point. It's the same thing with comedies and dramas. You know, if you're 30 minutes, you're automatically a comedy unless you go to the appeal board to say, but we're actually a drama. And if you're an hour, you're automatically a drama unless you go and say, but we're a comedy. And with limited series, it's it's been, you know, they've kind of done it on the honor system. They did it on the honor system for a while. Then they had to impose a set of rules basically because there were concerns that FX was gaming the system, was sort of growing everything up there. And so they've made rulings on a couple shows this year, which I think fit. You know, you look at American Horror Story, it's always been in the limited series category, but this year everyone danced around making a big deal about how it was tying in 2-3 previous seasons and all of these former characters. Well, the thing is that the rules that the TV Academy made very clearly state that if you have recurring characters between your seasons, you're not a limited series anymore.
Right.
So guess what? They're now a drama series, at least for this season. I've heard that True Detective is planning on going to the limited category, which is a little bit odd just because the first season they made the big show of going drama because they were convinced that that they had a season that could top all of the big boys on AMC, basically the Mad Men's and the Breaking Bad's, and then it turned out that it couldn't, and it got nominated for things but didn't win, and so my understanding is this season's going to limited. What were the other ones that I tweeted about that were
American Vandal?
Yes, American Vandal, which of course makes sense because it has the same two core characters.
Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then what was the third?
The Sinner.
Which also, the Bill Pullman character is continuity between the two seasons.
Exactly.
So, when I saw my colleague Scott Feinberg's tweet, no relation, initially panicked and thought, oh God, they're shaking up the stuff and it's going to be crazy and make no sense and whatever. And then I looked at the three things that they'd had these rulings on, and yeah, The Sinner may have had an entirely different plot between the first and second season, but the Bill Pullman character is the same character doing the same thing with memories of the things that happened in the first season. That, to me, is a drama series.
Well, over the years, Dan, as we've been talking, it's gotten kind of, you know, it's gotten very murky, you know, like where the Academy stands and what category fits, what show fits into what category. It's been murky, not just in the limited series categories as well, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and it's getting worse and worse, and all of these rulings, these specific rulings, they kind of make the argument, and no one thus far has suggested this, that what they really probably want to be doing is actually doing it like a best first-year show versus best continuing show, because by the logic of American Vandal and Sinner and to some degree American Horror Story, which is kind of its own thing, basically claiming they were limited series in their first season and then becoming comedies and dramas, which they always were, in the same way that Big Little Lies swept the movie miniseries category, but then there's going to be a second season coming out this summer and it's going to have to go as drama, in the same way that Downton Abbey won for movie miniseries its first season and then became a drama. And what you're basically saying at that point is that any new show that comes on can be like, yeah, we're a standalone whatever, we're a movie miniseries.
Yeah.
And then it gets renewed and suddenly it becomes the thing it's going to be. Well, at that point, all you're saying is first season versus ongoing show. That's right. And I don't know that that's necessarily a ridiculous designation to make. I don't know if you need to start doing best new comedy, best new drama, best ongoing drama, best, you know, because at that point then it becomes this huge thing, and do you start needing to make best new actress on TV? I don't know what the answer is to that, but that to me sounds like the categorization that they're doing with these.
Yeah.
And the drama comedy thing is it's just a total mess because it becomes this subjective thing, and all I can do over and over again is say, but Succession is a comedy, darn it, and everyone else will go, but no, Succession's a drama, and Succession's totally going to be a drama for any consideration.
That's,
and to me,
Succession is a comedy. It's a comedy. It's a comedy, and it's really hilarious. So I don't know. All right, okay, Dan, hang on a second. All right.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. You can read him in The Hollywood Reporter and check him out at The Fine Print, and that's F-I-E-N, and we have a link on our Facebook page. We'll come back and we'll talk more TV right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. 312-981-7200, talk and text, and for your Triple Play Thursday requests. One artist, three songs. We'll get to those in a little bit. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking, yesterday was National Siblings Day, so we're going to be talking about some sibling-related topics, including, you know, siblings in TV, siblings in movies, and then we'll talk about only things that only children understand, of which I am one, and I can teach you all if you're not an only child. But right now, we are talking TV. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we always talk TV, and let's bring Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, so you wrote about three series finales, and I watched two of the three. I've actually never seen You're the Worst. I've never seen an episode of You're the Worst. But I did watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and of course I watched Broad City, which is one of my favorite shows. But you took on those three finales. Tell us about that piece.
I did indeed. Now, first question, going back a little bit, have you gotten around to sampling Catastrophe?
Yes, I have, and it's great.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Catastrophe was one where I told you it was a guarantee you would like it.
Mm-hmm.
That had my Dan Feinberg guarantee for Nick DiGiulio.
And you've got, by the way, you've got a great track record at that.
I feel like I have, at this point, a pretty good sense of your taste. I think you would like You're the Worst. I don't think it's as good as Catastrophe, but I think it is. I think they are in many ways kind of kindred spirits, mm-hmm, in terms of tart, edgy, sardonic, sarcastic, scathing comedy. So you should check it out. I think you would like it. I'm not as 100% sure you'd love it as Catastrophe, because Catastrophe is brilliant. And really, I should have probably included the Catastrophe finale in this article as well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. That was my first recommendation for you, Nick, that you need to watch You're the Worst.
Okay.
And basically, this was me talking, sort of comparing these shows that are also coming to an end to the kind of behemoth that is coming to an end with Game of Thrones,
right,
where everyone is approaching the Game of Thrones finale, and they know the five questions that they think they need answered. And maybe everyone has a different five questions. It's a destination-driven finale. It's a checklist finale where people have things they need, whereas Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, You're the Worst, and Broad City weren't that kind of finale. You know, I think people might have been like, ooh, who is Rebecca going to choose on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
Yeah.
But I don't know that people had specific plot-driven needs. They had emotional needs, and I think that all three shows had really wonderful, smart finales that correctly assessed the audience's emotional needs for those characters, and all in different ways. And I think that the Broad City finale was surprisingly beautiful.
Oh my
and emotional.
God. Oh my God. I cried. I sat on my couch and cried during the Broad City finale. I'm a massive fan of those two women, and I've loved watching them grow as the show has progressed, and the show kind of became something a little bit different than the way it started. And I love that they dove in on the other side of the camera as, you know, the seasons progressed. I love Broad City, and I love those two ladies. I was crying at the end of that show.
I thought the last season really was the one that kind of embraced the idea of the passing of time. And as, you know, we talked about in previous episodes, that I was just way behind on it. I fell behind. And so I basically binged almost the entire show last weekend and leading into last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a great show. So I was happy to do that. But I was struck by how the final season was kind of about the characters changing and growing and moving forward in a way that the previous seasons hadn't been.
Right.
And I think it's smart to recognize that you have to do that. And I don't think it's natural for shows to keep characters in a state of arrested development permanently. I think you can do it. Like, I think that the Always Sunny guys have been rather brilliant at keeping those characters in arrested development way longer than is in any way justifiable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those characters have problems at this point with the way their lives are.
Yeah.
But I think that the creators actually understand that, and I think that's something important that you have to, you know, you look at how those characters could continue to be relatively unchanged over the years, and that speaks to a certain sickness darkness and sadness in them that I think is essential to those characters.
You know, it's funny, Dan. Dan, when I was married, my ex-wife would come in while I was, you know, I'd be watching It's Always Sunny, and she would sit down and watch about 10 minutes, and she would just look at me and go, how in God's name can you watch this show? These are the most despicable characters I've ever seen in my life. I said, yeah, and it's funny as hell. So she just couldn't watch it. She couldn't get past how despicable those characters are on Sunny.
And I think that's a fully rational approach. And I think you'll discover that You're the Worst is somewhat in that vein as
well.
All
right.
And that was where the show started, with the idea that these were characters who were all fairly toxic for each other, and then as the show moved along, it kind of discovered the ways in which they were also therapeutic and helpful to each other.
Yeah.
And I think that Broad City kind of started off with, okay, these are these two, you know, silly girls having fun in the city, getting high, and, you know, that's what they are. And then this season finally felt like, okay, so you had Alana wondering what her relationship was with Lincoln. You had her contemplating, you know, actually a career for the first time. You had Abby deciding, okay, I can't just be dithering around with my art. It has to be a commitment, et cetera. And so I think the show couldn't really have gone on much longer without reaching this transition point.
Yeah.
And I thought it made it rather beautifully. Just a great final episode. I thought that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend also made a final season where what it built to was exactly right and organic to the show. And I thought that You're the Worst did something similar. There were parts about it that bothered me because I felt like some of the choices characters made were kind of imposed by the show on the characters, which is something that annoys me, where I feel like it's a contrivance where I can feel the writers making decisions that the characters wouldn't make. But even still, that finale was wholly satisfying on an emotional level. I think there are a number of other shows that are reaching comparable ends. I think Jane the Virgin is heading towards that kind of finale where there isn't really a point that it's heading towards per se. It's not like I need answers to things. I just need the finale to kind of emotionally resonate on the way the show did. And it's such a different thing from what Game of Thrones has to do in its finale. Some people are going to care if the emotions resonate, but most people are just going to care, okay, did they stop the White Walkers? Who sat on the throne? You know, are the dragons okay?
Yeah.
And you know, I think there's more to it than that.
Okay. Well, you know, I would be remiss if we didn't bring up our biweekly mention of the goddess that is Pamela Adlon. My God, I love her. And this show, Better Things, is just, it's consistently just great every week. And I'm so glad that it's going to be back. You know what I mean?
It is chugging along, and it is for my money, at the moment, the best show on TV.
I agree with you.
There are a lot of comparably good shows at this point. I don't know if there's anything I would say is better. Yeah. It at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's because, one of the reasons why it's the best show on TV right now is because Atlanta's not on. So that's
because Atlanta's not on, because Better Call Saul is taking the year off.
Yeah,
there are a lot of shows that have sort of taken these pauses, and they, you know, they're entitled to do it. And some of them have taken the pauses to escape from Deep and Game of Thrones and Emmy juggernauts and whatnot. But of the best shows are not on at the moment.
I have to say, I thought the casting of Matthew Broderick on Better Things was just genius, and I thought he was great. And everything, and the kids are so good. And that goes without saying; these kids are unbelievable on the show. They're incredible. And you know, the stuff that, I mean, like the whole her mother hitting the kid with the car, and how that was handled, and what came out of that, and then the punchline at the end of the episode was just hysterical. And I love that show. I love everything about it.
The show has done well with kind of big name casting this season in a way that it hasn't previously. Both Sharon Stone and Matthew Broderick, both super additions to the
cast. Absolutely. And I love her. I love the doctor that drops the F-bombs too. Who tells her to go see a psychiatrist. I thought he was great too. But it's just a great show in general. Hey, What We Do in the Shadows. I've not watched Obviously, I haven't watched last night's episode. I will watch it in the morning when I get home. I saw a significant drop in laughs from the pilot to the second episode.
This is what I was telling you beforehand is that I wasn't exactly sure. I haven't watched the third episode yet either, and I think it might have been a good idea that I took time off. I don't know that the tone is exactly right for kind of a week to week or binging show. I think it may require a little kind of distance between episodes. But I'm looking forward to watching the third episode, and I haven't watched any since January, so that might be a good
move on my part. Sure. But yeah, I just there was a drop off in big, because I laughed a lot during the pilot. I mean, a lot, and then I laughed here and there in the second episode, and I still like the show very much. And the werewolves are in this episode that I'm going to go home in, and then that right there makes me excited. So,
I haven't gotten to it, so that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, Dan, always a pleasure, and people can check you out at The Hollywood Reporter, follow you on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Okay, Dan?
Excellent. Talk to you soon, Nick.
All right, buddy. Take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's tremendous. We have him on every 2 weeks to talk TV. It's always a lot of fun to talk TV with Dan. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to jump into the world of siblings in entertainment and the world of what it's like to be an only child. Yesterday was National Siblings Day, so we'll talk about that and more. And right here on 720 WGN. In search of good news in a world filled with bad, meet a woman who's touring the country for stories of kindness. Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.